Yeah. You ever been funny when you're talking with people and they just say random words that don't mean anything? You ever like hear someone say the yeah, no, yeah?
It drives me nuts.
Hockey
interviews are unbelievable.
Oh,
if you ask a question, it's usually yeah, no.
Yeah, no.
It's not this. It's
my mom, hilarious with hockey interviews. She makes fun of them because she can basically do a hockey interview.
Yep.
So there'll be an interview on, or we'll be talking about it, or whatever, and she'll just be sitting in her chair, wherever, and she just goes like, "Yeah, you know, we got a lot of character in this dressing room, and you know, we got to get pucks on net."
You know is a big one,
you know,
too.
And you know, with the sniffle,
I mean is another one.
Yeah,
I mean.
So funny. Just gotta play our game. Can't worry too much about them.
A lot of them start the sentence with "I mean."
Yeah. So funny.
How's everything going in Montreal? I mean. What?
And then they all do it too. Yeah. That's what's even more funny.
Yeah.
That's cool.
When you're young, it's different because it's your first couple of interviews. It's like it's supposed to be a thing, right?
Oh, I remember. It is like the most uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the Knox would come out of the dressing room and they would come in and say who the media guy wants to talk to. So they would come in and be like, "Yeah, Eric, you and you." So we go one at a time to do a little interview. And when I was playing, it was most of the time the newspaper.
The scribe.
Yeah, newspaper. So the guy would have a little pad and be scribbling down what we're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So
you
bizarre.
Want to slow down because there's no way you wrote all that.
And like you're 16, right?
Yeah.
It's like, what do I know about?
Yeah.
What do I know about how the game went?
You used to come in and ask the longest question ever.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there going, "Okay, I don't even know what the question is right now." And he's sitting like this far away from you. He's got coffee breath, smells like darts, dandruff on his shoulders, gray hair. You know, it's
so
like,
funny.
What, man?
Yeah, what? The stupid questions are the funniest. Did you see that one with McDavid a few weeks ago,
where they were
talking to him when they got eliminated, asking him if he's like feeling the urgency to win? It's like, you know. Like,
I
do you feel like they asked him something like, "Do you feel like the clock's ticking or something like that?" And he's sitting there, he's just like, he looks at the guy, he's like, "Well, obviously you want to win every year," but he's like, "I'm 26. I got lots of time." So funny.
So easy to, it's funny to watch the media and it's just their job. They got to create stories and stuff. And we've had a podcast about it, but it's amazing how they're so on and off the bandwagon. And they write a story that's they believe in their mind is real, but it has nothing to do with anything.
Especially the big market teams, too.
Yeah.
It's the worst with those.
Yeah.
The media are all over them all the time. It's funny.
Yeah.
Okay. So today's our last episode of our parenting series. It's episode 6 today. We said it was going to be 6, and here we are.
Yeah.
6 weeks goes by in a snap.
Yeah.
So for people that are members online, we're going to do a Q&A episode next week about the series. So. Good. I sent out the link. Everybody should have it now if you're a member. So you can send questions in there. If you want to ask a question, then you can become a member. So if you go on our website, you can find that out. And then we'll take those. We're going to prioritize those questions for next week's episode just to clean up anything maybe we missed, I guess.
Or that's questionable.
Yeah. And then outside of that, we got the AAA camps too coming up. So if you want to come, shoot me a email. I have the links online. I made a post about it. And we're getting a lot of people asking from out of town, so it should be a pretty unique experience. Actually, I was talking to one of the members on the phone about it yesterday, who was thinking of coming down, and he was kind of asking, more or less, is it worth it? Was kind of like the question, is it worth coming to the camp?
Yeah.
And my response to him was like, these are 4-day camps, so I said, if you think you're gonna get huge turnaround in skill development or something in 4 days, like it's not going to happen. What you're going to get is a cool experience. You're going to be around hockey players. You're going to get some really good coaching. You're going to get some good training off the ice.
You'll come up with something.
Yeah. You're going to experience kind of what you should be doing or how you should be thinking about certain things when you're developing as a hockey player. It's not like this camp is going to turn you into the Wayne Gretzky, but you'll get a good sense or a good comparable for when you go back home and do whatever it is you're doing. So that's all I was saying on that. And I think that's all I have to say. Do you have anything to say?
Not about that. Nope. I'm excited for the kids to come here though.
Yeah, for sure.
It's good to be working with some new talented kids. It's great.
Yeah.
Because I was doing that on the road when I was going up to Guelph and Kitchener and those areas. Yep. When I'd go on game days, people would get me to come in, and very enjoyable. Yeah, new eager kids.
Yeah, it's cool to get some touch points.
Well,
with
kids. It's good from my perspective because I don't know them. I didn't know them. Now I do. And then good for them because they got a different flavor.
Yeah, for sure.
They learned a lot. They're very eager to learn.
Yep. So today we're going to talk about successful support and communication strategies as parents. So I guess I like this as the final episode. Because after all the other things we talked about, I can't even remember them in order now, but after all the other topics we talked about, at the end of the day, your ability to teach, I'm going to use teach instead of parent, but I'm going to use the word teach, effectively is going to come down to your, like, who you are for the kid and how you behave towards them and how you interact with them. That's the make or break thing, right? Because you can know all the right answers. And you can say all the right things, or you could have all the good advice. But if your interactions with your kid or with whatever kid you're trying to mentor aren't done effectively or in a way that kid will respond to, then it doesn't matter how much you know. And that's kind of one thing you always say is, how does it go? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
That's it.
That's the one. And I think that's super true, man. And because especially when the kids are young, like, they don't know that you train Aaron Ekblad, you know, they might not know that you are really connected in the hockey industry. They don't know that you have all this experience and could be really impactful for them and in their life. And they don't care until you care about them, then they'll care. And so I think that's kind of how I wanted to theme the wrap up episode. It's kind of just like, what is your actual job or your role or your goal as mom and dad, and then how do you kind of fulfill that when we're talking about interacting with your kid? So that's kind of the tee up for the episode. Do you have anything you want to start with before I start getting into the meat?
Well,
or what do you think?
I was gonna throw this in somewhere, but it keeps coming in here. So it really funny. So, like, one of the first things I want to say about this thing is understanding to keep it fun, because if your child ends up being a good enough hockey player to get their school paid for or to play major junior hockey or USHL or whatever it is, then it becomes fun, but in a different way. It becomes more job-like. So, and that's true, and I think everyone could sort of understand that. But what's interesting, and we've, you know, conversation with so many of the guys that I train, is once you get to the National Hockey League level, it's a job. So, interestingly enough, over the last month or so, because playoffs have ended and guys get called up to the American League or to NHL teams and stuff, and just three conversations like bang, like that, and I had one yesterday with actually a member, great guy, by the way, who his son got called up. Yeah, no, I'm not going to say the team, but so I got three different teams. They got called up at the end of the year. So I asked, how's the boys doing? So every one of them to a T said, they're just tired. They don't want to go up there and hang out in a hotel for a week or two or three or whatever the unknown length that team's going to be in the playoffs. They're not doing that much. They're doing some training. They're doing some practicing. They're living in a hotel. It's a long day. They just want to come home and relax. And that was yesterday. He goes, he says he's tired. He just wants to go spend a couple weeks at home. I go, yeah, I get it. He goes, but someone's paying your bills now. You have to do what they say. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's a job now. And, you know, if you would have asked those same people a year or two or three ago before they were drafted or signed, that at the end of the year, you're going to go up to the Philadelphia Flyers for the next 3 weeks, what do you think the answer, what do you think it would have been? They would have been depressed or happy.
Oh, dream come true, man.
Dream come true. Yeah. Bring it on, man. But they're tired, and they realize, okay, it's not my time yet, and I'm just here putting in my time. And maybe it's the wrong attitude, right? It could be. Just drop something there. But it's just a real attitude. So they got to go up there instead of, and maybe it gets away in their training. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe it helps their development. Maybe it doesn't. But they should kind of learn the systems or the culture of the business. And the bottom line is to this is that at some point, if you're a really good player, it's going to be a job just like any other job, man. Like, no, not like any other job, But like any other job, there's days where it's just like, come on, man. Like, it's every day. I got to work out every day. I got to stretch it out every day. I got to listen to this guy every day. I got to do this. And that's what it is. So the fun piece is like really important when you're growing up. Right. Like, and if you even just take like the junior experience, as opposed to being a pro, what I mean by junior experience, not our program, but the junior experience being like, let's say you play in the Canadian Hockey League. Okay. That's why it's the best time of your life. That wasn't a really good answer. That's not the reason it's the best time of your life is because for the most part, every guy on the team is away from home, right? They're playing in a city and it's under pressure and it's a whole different environment, but they don't have wife and kids and dogs and responsibilities to take care of. They just have to play hockey and do a little bit of school, right? So after practice or on days off, who gets together is the boys and they go play pool or they do things together. Might be watching a movie, might be just hanging out and they're being idiots together, but there's no responsibilities. And they're actually not, they're getting paid in education. They're getting paid in different ways, but they're in it together and you spend 3-4 years together for the most part. And it's friends for life. Whereas when you get to the National Hockey League or pro hockey, all of a sudden you're sitting in the same room and you know, who's going out for lunch today? It's like, you know, five of them have a wife and kids and all those responsibilities. And it's like the fun is not the same as it used to be. So anyways, to get back to that, that's why I think it's really important that when parents are going through this process is to make sure, yes, you're doing the hard work, you're doing the principles of sport and all that stuff. But the most important thing to me is to keep it fun, because if you play this long enough and are good enough, that just pure joy is gone. So a parent's role in this, because you can make this a lot more enjoyable or you can make it somewhat miserable.
Yeah.
That's the first thing I would talk about.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it's a really good point, because what everyone says when they stop playing hockey, the thing they miss most, it's never the hockey. It's never the practices or the travel or this game or whatever. What they remember sometimes are those highlight moments of hockey, but the things that guys remember most is the hangout. It's the dressing room. It's the extracurriculars outside of the actual gameplay and the training, you know? And when you move up a level, a lot of that is now gone, because like you're saying, you have the captain of your team isn't 20. The captain of your team is Patrice Bergeron, who has a family and has places to be and is mature and is a grown up.
And he might want to hang out with his financial advisor or his business partner somewhere more than the guy on the team, maybe.
Or his kid.
Right? Yeah.
So it's like, it's just a whole different setup where it's like you introduce that element of responsibility now, where it's not just you're free to be. It's like that when you go to university too, right? You can go out and and party and do whatever, because you have no real responsibility. You just get to delay it for the 4 years that you're in school or the 4 years that you're in junior. And then, you know, I was having a conversation with one of our guys yesterday who's coming out of junior now. And he's kind of just like, man, it's just like such a weird time, because I'm trying to figure out like what the next move is. And it's like, yeah, that's real life now. It's not just junior with your buddies anymore. It's like you need to figure out what you're going to do with your life. It's not the same. You think it's going to last forever and then it's over like that. So it's important. That's an important thing to point out, because you get these kids that finish, they didn't think twice about it. And the next thing you know, it's like, oh, wow, this is actually a job. It's not just I get to have fun and play a game. And that's what a lot of people don't see or understand or put in perspective, especially as sports fans or people that just watch the game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah. So the fun part, like keeping it fun, like I'm talking to the parents more, like obviously for the kids, keep it fun. And like you said, you have that window of opportunity to give it everything you got to try to make it somewhere. And don't forget, like as much fun as you can have, you have to keep if you're serious about it, to keep the effort level and do your due diligence on doing everything the best that you can, staying in shape, eating right. And, you know, it's those days that you take off where, you know, now you look back, like for that guy you're talking, it's like, oh, maybe those days I took off, or maybe that game that I was kind of, those games that I kind of month, whatever, where I was like taking it for granted, I'd like to have that back. Right. So, because it goes by faster, no matter how many times you tell players that it goes by real quick, it goes by real quick. And then when it's done, it's done. But anyways, from the parents' point of view, like to be a good parent in this, in my opinion, is like, honestly, it could be some of the best times of your life between you and your kids, kid or kids. It actually can, because number one, you're spending good quality time with them, not the kind where you're sitting at, like, I don't know how I would do it with my kids if they didn't play sports. Like, what do you talk about at the kitchen table? Like, the common ground, unless you're a plumber and they want to be plumber or something like that. I what's the common ground? So in this is like, you're helping them navigate life through a sport. And if it's always Joe serious all the time, or hard ass all the time, or tell me all the, you know, the view that I'm saying, like, where parents think they have to talk about it. And it's like Joe serious all the time. It's like, it's not fun for the kid. But for me, the whole process of taking your kid through to whatever level they get to whatever level they get through is awesome, because it's a learning process. It's the kids are learning about you, right? That you're learning about them. You're seeing what they're doing. You're seeing what they're thinking by talking about their sport. And then of course, applying that to those principles to different parts of life. But they get to see, you get to see what your kid's all about, because when you're playing sports and you make it a good environment, like with your kids, then they're willing to open up about a lot of things, right? And then the flip side to that, which is great, is the kids get to see a lot about what you're about, right? So as much as you can look at your kid and say, yeah, he seems lazy here, or his give a crap meter on certain things are like, you know, the details, he doesn't care, the hard work, he only works hard to a certain degree. And you can coach them on that, or parent them on that, how they treat people, the body language, all these different things that you can just talk about, attitudes and stuff. It'll reflect in sports. But then the same thing is they can look at you and they can flip the table and say, okay, but dad, you know, I always use that example of if the dad always is giving the kid shit, always barking at him on that, you need to be working hard, you need to shoot your pucks, you need to do this and that. And then every time the kid comes home, he's sitting on the couch having a beer, or, you know, eating shit, or not really doing anything with his life. It's like he's looking at you with the same, but he's not allowed to say what he's allowed to say, or would like to say.
Exactly. Right?
You can't say, you're not supposed to talk like that to your parents, so you don't. Yeah. So I think that's like one of the best things. And then like with that is if you can make it fun, like the most important thing to me is like actually enjoy watching your kid play, because as you said earlier, it goes by really quick. And then when it's gone, it's gone. Like I just said that to my kid yesterday. I said, like, we sat down to eat, reading. I said, I don't want you to leave yet, but man, do I miss watching you play hockey. I just miss it. I love watching you play. It's not about being in the first NHL first rounder. It's not, I love seeing him accomplish whatever he's accomplishing, but the reality is I love watching him play. I love it. And I mean, that's a gift he's given me, as much as I've given him the gift of allowing him to play. Right.
Yeah. So that's one of my favorite points that you make. And I like hearing it from you, because you're in the position of being the dad. It's like your kids see what you're doing. If you think you're going to fake them out, like if you think you can play pretend, you can't play pretend, man. Like the kids are not dumb. Even if they can't explain what it is they're recognizing, they can tell. If you're saying you have to do it, Eric, but I don't do it, dad, you know, or if, and it doesn't have to be in the same way, but it's just in whatever way it is that you show it, you know, whether that's hard work or good habits or going to bed on time or training or eating or fill in the blank with whichever thing you're trying to teach your kid. Like the kids pick up on the phony, man. They pick up on the phony, and it doesn't matter if you're dad, and you can get away with, you can explain away your own negligence in whatever those areas are to a degree, but then it catches up quick. I remember seeing it with other parents, or even with my parents. I to a T, like I remember this exact point, just noticing how my parents behave, how they talk to people, how they talk about themselves, how they talk about other kids, I remember noticing all of those things, good or bad. So if you think that you're going to instill all these great lessons on your kid while at the same time you're not following your own rules, it's the most noticeable thing ever as a kid. And you're not going to get away with it. It's going to catch up at some point. Even if you think you're super smart, or you're going to outsmart your kid or trick them or trick her into believing something you want them to believe, it'll work for a little bit. But then at a certain point, it's going to come out in the wash. You know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
Yep. So we're kind of getting into that like topic of how to be a good parent, supporting your kid in a supporting role. So you kind of touched on like the fun thing and a little bit on the positive part. I don't know if you have something else you want to say on that, or do you want me to go into
what about positivity?
Yeah, like we've kind of we've touched on this before. Just kind of how like it's good to be positive. It's not good to be pretend positive.
Yeah, so yeah. Let's go. It's okay. Good. I think it's important to do because maybe there's different angles on it today and stuff too. But yeah, it's important to be positive. But like people make a big mistake of what a positive attitude doesn't mean that everything's just great. You know, one of the and I know there's two ways to look at this, but one of the things that I don't like the quote is everything happens for a reason.
Oh, that quote bugs me.
Yeah. No. You could say, yeah, but everything happens for a reason for you to learn something. Like you could say that, but for me, that's just being positive. Everything happens for a reason. Well, if you went to bed at 2 a.m. and you had a shitty game, everything happens for a reason. Well, no, there's a reason everything happens. Is more the way I like to say it. And I don't even want to be like Nietzsche or anything like that right now. I just like playing on words because I think the positive words are just positive words sometimes. And it sounds good, but it's like, if you had a good, I didn't play good today, Dad. And if you sit there and you say, oh no, you played great. They say, that's just being positive, you know, or, you know, so I think looking at it as a positive, like when you look at things as a positive is learning experiences from it. That's the most important thing. Like you can take positives out of everything, right? Like, so for example, if you didn't train really hard for 2 months, you went to camp and you really struggled to make the team or you didn't make the team. Like the positive in that is that if you learned that you need to work out and you have to stay on top of things, that's a positive learning environment, right? So you can go on for a little bit on that.
Well, I think I really like actually I said that. The everything happens for a reason. I don't like that because it gives an excuse almost. Yeah. And like it almost in a certain way, it like justifies inaction. Yeah. Because if everything happens for a reason, like everything will just happen and whether or not you do anything about it, just things are just going to happen. So it kind of relinquishes the control to a certain degree, which I don't really care for, but that reframe that you did, there are reasons everything happens. It's not exactly the rainbows and sunshine version, yeah. But it's that there's like a, the word that you said, your Christina said is like, we're very pragmatic. And there's that element to looking at things where it's, we're not playing pretend, you know, playing pretend is not good. It's we're being realistic and we're taking things that happen and we're being real about what's going on. And that's, you can pull positives out and it's good to focus more on positives because focusing on negatives isn't necessarily helpful. Though it's good to identify negatives sometimes, but go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, like, when you look at a hockey player, like, just take the hockey itself, right? So if your kid is getting to the point, like, a really good example would be the draft year. And then, you know, my son's next year. Like, that's a real thing. If your kid comes up to you, and maybe, you, like, myself, I have an actual clue. He comes up to me and says, Dad, do you think I'll get drafted? Well, when he was going into his draft year in the OHL, I said, yeah, 100%. But how high do you think I'm going to go? And I had to be real with them. Like, it's like, I think you're going to go very high, but there's a lot of good players. Like, it's not just, oh yeah, you're going to get drafted. Everything's going to be fine. But and if your kid's not real good, like, it's now you have to have an honest conversation and being positive isn't always fluffy and nice. Sometimes being positive is, you know, I don't think you're there yet, but here there's this, this, and this that you can probably work on to make yourself better. Or Dad, how do you think, you know, how do I stack up? Because those are the questions that kids ask their parents. And if they can't ask their parents, that's pretty bad, yeah. Right? But if you think, Dad, how do you think I stack up, like, with my age group and stuff like that? It's like, being positive would just be saying, oh, you're doing really good. But, like, it's not necessarily positive because if that's wrong information, you just smacked them over the head with a freaking sledgehammer.
Yeah. And right? Then there's also things that can sound negative that are actually positive. It's like if you're identifying a weakness, it's like that can hurt your feelings to recognize or to hear for the first time. Like the first time a coach says to you, like, you're no good at this thing, that is, it could sound negative or it could feel like a negative, but it's actually a positive because now you've figured out something to work on. And I think this kind of transitions into from the parenting or it could even be the coaching side where like the tone of things comes into it and how there's kind of a difference between if you're going to be hard on a kid versus you're, now you're just being a dick. And I think that's where, as parents or as coaches, the tone of how you deliver a message starts to be really important, because it plays into this positive thing. If you're doing the pretend positive and just always speaking positive words and doing that positive reinforcement all the time, the kids know when it's not actually positive, you know? So it's an ineffective strategy if you're constantly pretending that things are good when they're not good, you know? And it can be equally positive to identify a problem and be honest about the problem. Like, that is still positive. And I think,
well, it's a positive because you're taking maybe a negative and you're working on something. So you're finding a solution.
Yeah.
Or working on a solution.
But I think aside from the words that you're saying, this is that positive environment that you're talking about now. You're creating a positive environment, even though the words you're saying aren't always 100% positive all the time. Now, that doesn't mean, to the point I'm getting to next, that doesn't mean you have to be a dick in how you deliver the message. There's a way to do it, and this goes for coaches as well. And you kind of have to read your kid or read your players or whoever it is that you're sending the message to. But there's a difference between, you know, delivering something that could be taken as negative and being a dick about it versus this is an honest message that you need to receive as a player. So maybe you could talk about that a little bit.
Well, kind of I want to backtrack 1 second.
Okay, go.
Because I want to stick on the positive thing for one more second, but I want to shed a different light on it.
Okay.
If I'm allowed to shed a light.
Yeah, go.
What I would like to say also is that positive, what I'm looking at as we're talking about this, is that as a parent, you can make this a positive experience, not just conversation, positive experience. And I think a lot of people, where it goes south or sideways really quickly, is once a kid starts playing, I'm not talking NHL or anything like that yet, but early on, a lot of the parents will start looking at other people and there's a comparison, or you have to compete to be on the AAA team, even though that might be out of the kid's wheelhouse, or it might not be. It might be or might not be. It doesn't matter. But the point is that when you start worrying about everything else, then you can shift the reasons why you're playing, and this experience can be less positive. So what I mean by that is, like, to the extremes, but not really, is a lot of people that I see is once they start playing, they start thinking of this experience of being achieving something. Do you know what I mean? Like achieving something, like achieve what? Because if you're in this to play in the NHL or to get your school paid for, it can't be that. Like, it just can't be that. That's number one, not for the parent to decide. It's okay to recognize some talent, but that can't be the thing. Because if that's the thing, then there's not a whole lot to talk about. But what it can be is, it's about making this a positive experience so that you're communicating with your kid that they're talking to you. It's about seeing problems and solving them. It's about spending time with them. It's about, you know, seeing them kind of go through an adversity and being able to help your kid get out of it, because all that stuff adds up into life. It's about when they're choosing the friends on their hockey team, it's like you can look at them as a parent. Like, the positive thing is that you can see who they pick, who they gravitate to. Do they follow? Do they lead? Do they just go? Are they vanilla? Do they have energy? Do people call them? Like, there's all those positives too with the experience, right? And that's, I think a lot of people kind of miss out on a little bit, is the actual experience can be very, very positive. And that's another angle I would like people to kind of look at, is like, don't worry about, and I think we're talking about it after, about the outcomes, right? It's the process that's more important. And, you know, we talk about that in a lot of different things, but this experience of going through the game is a positive one if you choose to make it that way. Right, it can't be about outcomes and just winning, and, you know, but it's about winning, and it's about all that stuff, but it's not just about that.
Yeah, I think, and I'm gonna go right to that process. We'll go back to the other one after, but just because we're here now. But I think that's another thing that's important, is it's not all or nothing in any direction, regardless of what we're talking about. We say this all the time. So even about being positive, right? It's not always positive. Always positive is not good. You want a positive environment, that's good. It's not always about the outcomes. Sometimes it's about the outcomes, though. It's like, sometimes you want to win. It's like, if you could have won and you didn't for whatever reason, it's like, that's something that should be addressed. It's not just like, hey, bud, it doesn't matter about the outcome. It's just the process. It's like, Yes, but you have to pick your spot of when. Let's address the outcomes too, though, right? Because process gets tiresome if you never get the outcome, you know? So when we're talking about all these things, it's never absolutes, right? But the vast majority, especially when we're talking about development as kids, should be heavily, heavily focused on process, because there's going to be a lot of outcome that they don't control. It's not in their direct control. No, you know, 100%. If your kid's playing a 1v1 sport,
yeah,
it's a lot easier to control your outcome because it's you versus the other person. That's it. There's no other factors. There's no other variables. Even though within that, it can be very complicated. But if you're playing tennis, it's like you are playing and it's nobody else.
No
excuses.
It's
not on anyone else. There's no excuse, right? Yeah. If you're fighting MMA, it's me versus you. If you're doing chess, it's me versus you. There's no other variables. So especially when you're in an environment where not everything is directly in one person's control, it's even more significant, I think, to focus on that. Make sure we're doing things the right way. You know, because we've talked about this before. It's like if you're outcome driven, especially when kids are young, you can be fooled by the fact that one kid is better. Maybe they're not playing hockey right, but they're just better. So they are getting the outcome, but they're not actually learning the right process of how to play the game, you know, and that's super, super important. I want to go back, unless you want to touch on that for any longer. I want to go to the kind of the balance between being hard on kids versus it's too much now. You can use Charlie as an example on this one, just because it'll be easier to tell a story. So I'll give an example with my dad first. My dad was really hard on me, and he was probably like 70% of the time fair about it. But then there was like that 30%. I'm just making that up number up now. Maybe it was more, maybe it was less, where it was like, it was a bit much for my age or for where I was at or how I was learning or whatever. In my opinion, when I look back on it, if we take all things considered, now that I don't play hockey anymore, I think a lot of those, even that unfair part, ended up being beneficial in certain ways, just because it shaped how I do things and all of that. But it definitely came with some negatives for me personally. And I know your approach with Charlie was a little bit different than how my dad was with me. And so I'm curious if you ever thought about or how you drew the line between I need to be hard on my kid here versus like hammering it so much that now it's just you're being a jerk or it's overwhelming the system or fill in however you want to say that. Did you ever have that, even if it was maybe a conversation with Christine about it or a conversation with yourself, or like, where do I draw the line between being hard on him and expecting what he's capable of versus going over the line, or even the other way too, maybe where it's like not enough push?
Yeah, no, I just have to be honest. Yeah. I think if there's a perfect dad, it was me.
Yeah.
No, but I actually mean it, like, yeah, in a certain way. Like I'm kidding. Obviously I'm not even close to perfect, but I can honestly say, but I'm going to be vulnerable here. I can honestly say that most of the time, I was very, very good. I let him, and these might be different circumstances than a lot of other people. He was around this so much. He was just around it. So when he played and when he decided to be like a player, like this is something that he wanted, where I would kind of let him ask the questions, but I would always let him know that it was hard and that I had some expectations of, if you're going to do this, do it, work out, all these things. So I think maybe in the beginning of his workouts, I would be a little frustrated, just like, come on, man, like, don't make excuses. You got this. Like, okay, so this would be my extreme stuff, is like, I look at, because I know the reality of this game, and I would look at, okay, so even though you're 14 years old or 15 years old and you say you want this, you have to map out now. You've got three years to get in the OHL. You have a couple years after that to get to be a pro if you want it. And if you're going to do it, you better freaking do it. So I didn't like, and this is probably my flaw, I didn't like him going to a cottage at 15.
Right.
I didn't like it.
Yeah.
Because he was playing the OHL.
My dad would have been the same.
Yeah. I was like, you know what? That's another weekend. Like, you don't understand the task at hand. So that was my mindset. It's like, you actually don't understand. And my frustration, if I ever had one, is like, and maybe that's still the same thing, but you can't even go there because they're still kids, sort of. So what I know the commitment level needs to be, sometimes he doesn't match what I know, what I actually know it needs to be, actually. So does he do more than most people? 100%. Does he do things on his own? 100%. Does he surprise me with some of the stuff that he pulls out? Yes. Would I like him to read more books? Yes. Would I like him to do more mental toughness stuff? Yes. But does he do some? Yes. But is it to the level that I think is necessary and what I know is necessary? No. But show me a guy that does. You're going to find very, 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 very few, make one in a million or less. So anyways, that's where I think maybe I portray that a little bit. It's like, you know, maybe I should ask mom if I could go to the cottage. Like this, I'm talking a couple of years ago. He gets it now. So that would be one. And I think I have projected it, but not to the point where it was like overbearing, right?
So do you think that because this is like, you're kind of in a unique situation because you had this and you had a lot of other resources around him where maybe the job wasn't as on you as dad to enforce that as it might be if you're another dad that has a different job or whatever. Like, so how much do you feel like having PowerTech was a safety net where you could give him a little bit more leash because you knew the person he was going to run into was me or Dalton or his buddies that also play AAA, or he's going to run around the gym on his own with me not watching? Like how much do you think that was a factor? And then maybe what would you say to people who don't have, to whatever degree that is, what would you say to people that maybe don't have that on what they could do or how they should be thinking about it? Because I think to a degree, this was probably a really nice backstop for you to let him freewheel a little more than you might have as a dad. So if you can identify like any difference for someone who is maybe like my dad that never played hockey or whatever, what would you say to them if they don't have that, maybe that same sense of security?
Well, I think, I don't know if it's a real fair question because your dad is very successful in his area. Yeah. And he's a hard, hard worker and a detailed guy. So for him, giving that message to you, he just applied his success to a different field. Yeah, I agree. So he actually knows because he was, instead of being an athlete, he was a musician and a very, very good one, successful as hell. That didn't become a top 10 guy, right? Yeah. So he knows how hard it is. So he was just relaying that message to you. It's unacceptable if you want to be successful, right? It's kind of a good thing. I think the hardest part would be with someone that doesn't have, I don't want to say not success because that's not the right answer. But if you're working, if you've done life like the average person, and that's not, I don't mean that negative, but an average person might go to high school, go to university, get a job, work for someone, put a few bucks away, and maybe that job is like, I'll use a teacher for example. It's not grind. It's some of the jobs that you get is not a pool of the best of the best of the best get it. It's a pool of your time came up, the applications came up. Like it could have been a little bit of luck. Whereas in a profession like hockey or music or something like that, there's very, very little luck. It's all about how good you are. So if you haven't gone through that grind, and I'm not saying going through school and working a job isn't a grind. It's a different grind.
It's a different
level. If anybody takes this the wrong way, I don't mean it that
way.
Well,
so just because I've done both. I did the school thing. Yeah. Like my degree's in engineering. Like that's a hard degree. It's not even close to the level of difficulty of being an elite athlete.
No.
So I'll just backstop you on that.
No, we're just talking about just my brother and I. My brother called me today. He goes, like the amount of things you have to cover to be in the right. He was asking how much is Charlie weigh now. So I told him, he's a big boy. I go, yeah, I know, but I don't want him to get too big because it could be, I don't want him to get slow, but I don't want him to be, he's got a certain game that he needs to play. He's got to have enough strength. So I said, it's a, you know, you're doing it is the balancing act or the science behind making sure that he's strong enough, fast enough, lean enough, big enough, heavy enough, quick enough, agile enough, has a gas tank and has conditioning and all those things all in one. So how you do that in 2 hours a day.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyways, I think so without going through that absolute grind, Because what's out of your control is if you're 5'10" or 5'11", you're almost 6 feet, that could play a role against you big time. Whereas if you go to university to be an engineer, that means nothing, right? So there's the physical abilities that make a big difference. So anyways, I think those people would have the hardest time.
Yeah, that's kind of more who I was gearing that question towards too.
So I think they would have the hardest time because they may not really understand that grind, and they might, but they may not, because and what story or what do you have to compare that to? Like, what is the elite of the elite? Have you ever been with the best of the absolute best? So you might push way, way, way too hard because you think every minute of the day should be bad advice, you know, run 20 miles, right? Or maybe you just say, well, yeah, you've worked hard today because you went for a run, and that's not enough. So that's where a really fine line is. That's why it's really, 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 really important to get around people that know what they're doing and actually care to give you the advice to say, okay, yeah, you don't have a clue, man.
So then would it be fair to say to maybe parents that don't know, or maybe they don't have the experience to draw from, like, obviously number one is like, you do your best, like do the best you can with information that you have, try to make the best decisions you can with information you have. But then I think the biggest word of caution that I will give to many parents, because I see it with the parents that we interact with, is just be careful with how much you think you know. It's really, really, really important, because I get a lot of dads will come in and talk to me, and it'll be a conversation like, well, and so I told him this, he should do this, this, and this. And I'm sitting there and I'm just like, that's not the right thing to tell them, right? And that's from experience and being through it and training kids and all that same stuff that you would say, you know. And so just be very, try to go into it with a lot of humility, because you might think you're giving good advice, but you're actually not giving good advice, you know. And that doesn't mean you aren't going to give good advice or you can't give good advice just because you are a plumber and not a hockey player, right? Or you're a teacher and 100%. Not a hockey player. You can. It's just be aware. You have to have a lot of self-awareness, because you could think you're telling your kid the right stuff, and then, you know, you walk in and you start talking to somebody like you or someone like me, and you're talking to us about what you're having them do, and we're just like, that shouldn't be what you guys are doing, you know? Yeah. So just that would be the thing I would say.
I want to go back to that in 1 second. Yeah. So just an example is, I was at someone's house the other last summer, and Charlie was there. He goes, Charlie didn't want to eat today. I said, yeah. I said, he's on a pretty strict regimen. He's you know, he's managing his body. I didn't say it this way, but his body. I said to him, I said, he's just got to be careful what he eats. So he goes, no, he moves all the time. He can eat anything. But that's his kids play hockey. He thinks that you just eat anything and you can play, but that's not the way she works, right? So anyways, to go back to that, what we were just talking about is all that stuff. Like, I think we got away from a little bit of something, because you don't have to be perfect until the kids decide that they actually want to get somewhere 14, 15 years old. Like, all the other stuff, it's not that it doesn't matter, but it's not like, don't lose your mind over it. Just, you know, but what I would say is pay attention to, like, are they interested that there's a game tomorrow or the next day? Are they thinking about it at all? Are they talking about it at all? Are they going to bed early, or they just go up, show up and play, right? But anyways, to go back to where I feel like maybe I was getting to the point where I could have been crossing the line, for me, that I saw it, I felt it without my son saying anything, and it was his first year in the OHL. And now I'm going to give you a caveat of why this was like this, okay? I'm going to make an excuse for myself, because that's what we all do, right? But it was being very honest. Because my vantage point was, this is a huge step, because when he went into the league, he was 15 years old, and he was, you know, when you're 15 playing, and people don't understand, when you play the best of the best, even if they're a year older, it's real hard. Well, you guys that are 5 years older, it's even harder. So, you know, in the first year in the league, you're going to have ups and downs. So some days it was just like, and I said this before, it was, he would talk to me. Well, when we talked, like for the first month, it was like every day we talked just to make sure everything was good, right? Billets, you know, just to touch base. I miss my kid. Then it was like, if there was any issue that came up, oh, this, like, okay, Charlie, so, you know, handle it like this, this, this. And yeah, okay, Dad. And then for the first little bit, he goes, oh, yeah, Dad, thanks. Then I noticed It was, yeah, okay. Okay, Dad. Yeah, I gotta get cracking here. So then I went, okay. I know right then and there I was talking too much. I was speaking to him too much. And said this before, but there's times when your kids are going to vent. They just want a place to say something. And then there's a time where they actually want advice. And I think if it comes every single day, that advice, it's not what they want to hear. And that's when, as I said before, when I said, I got off the phone and I went, damn it, I blew it. And I didn't blow it because I got a great relationship with him. But that's when I sent him a text. And then we talked on the phone after. And I just said, dude, I said, I didn't say step out of line, but I said, I think I was, I'm talking too much. And I said, I understand that you're probably good, but when you say something to me as a dad, I want to take care of it for you or help you take care of it, keep you on the straight and narrow. Almost like don't make the mistake, right? You know what I mean? Don't avoid making a mistake. So I just said, listen, when you talk to something, I'm going to ask you the question, do you want to talk about it or are you just venting? And then he said, okay, Dad, that's awesome. And then next time that happened, I said, do you want to talk about it? Or, no, I'm just telling you. I said, okay, cool. And then it was good. But then there was other times he goes, yeah, like what do I do? And then we could talk. And it really made things a lot better. So I caught myself. But that relationship would have sucked. I am telling you right now, that relationship could have sucked. Because what happens is, like, what we forget is our kids are growing up and they're getting wiser. They're getting more experienced and they understand life a little bit better than sometimes you think. And they don't always want, like, I made mistakes, a ton of mistakes, still do. And I either learn from them or I do it again. And I'm still alive. I still have a business. I've still got a house so far, right? You will learn and you have to let your kids learn. And that's something I caught it on time because I mean, I'm so interested in, he's living my whole life. So I love to hear the story. I love to hear what's going on in the dressing room or the jokes and the, how's this guy hard to play against? And like, it's not like a super fan thing. It's like,
from what I see,
yeah,
because
we can talk about it so much, but then it's like, I know when there's times I just change the subject, throw in some tunes and stuff. So that was my biggest thing.
Yeah.
That was a long story.
No, but it was good because the point that I'm pulling out of that is, and I think this is where parents can swing and miss, is that you caught it, that you were going to, it was too much. And I remember when it was too much. And as to your point you mentioned at the kind of at the start of the episode, is just like the kid isn't allowed to say what they want to say to you all the time when you're the parent, right? So if you don't read those signals, like your parent or your kid's not going to tell you to F off when they're 14, you know, some might. But for the most part, kids know, like, I can't tell my parents what I really think of them when they're pissing me off, you know? So as the parent, if you don't pick up on that signal where it's like, it's too much, man, it's just get out of my face. Even if you don't pick it up from the kid right away, you have to be able to pick it up from yourself. It's like, okay, we just had a half hour conversation and I talked for 29 minutes and 30 seconds. It's like, that probably isn't a great dynamic when you're communicating with your kid, you know? And so we're going to dig into that communication thing again in a second, but I kind of want to talk about a couple other things first. The first one is going to be kind of to one of the themes of what you're talking about here is kind of navigating the distractions. Because, you know, you were talking about how you know what it takes, you've seen what it takes, and you can tell when there's some pitfalls that are going to pull you away. And I feel like when you see players doing that or getting away from it, you right away want to yank them back and not let them go down the path. And I think like some of the key distractions for hockey, and maybe it's different in other sports, but you can fill in the blank with your distraction. It's going to be no matter what, it's going to be partying and all the things that come with that. So that's booze, that's drugs, that's chew, that's whatever other thing. And then there's girls. Those are the two, the partying and that umbrella category, and then girls. Those are the two, not even necessarily killers, but they can be a killer for a kid that thinks he wants to pursue some sports. So I think it's important that you know how to navigate that as the parent to help your kid through some of those situations. And I'm just going to lay this out right off the hop. The wrong strategy is never let them do any of it. That's the wrong strategy, because that's going to be a recipe for them hiding things from you. And I remember that with a lot of guys that I played with. And I'm very fortunate that my parents were both, particularly my mom, more on the strict side of like not letting me do certain things. But like you always say, they parented through my sports. So it made it easy for me to not care to do those things, to not care when I was in grade 10 to go to a party, or grade 11 to go party, or having a girlfriend as soon as I was in grade 7 and guys and girls start hanging out with each other. I didn't care about any of those things. It wasn't even on my radar, really. But I do remember getting the guilt trip about times where I'd be going to a social thing, or when I got my first girlfriend, or whatever those distractions are. So I remember my parents striking a pretty good balance of not going too much. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that they just could use hockey, or I could use hockey on myself. But from the parent perspective, to my question, is like, from the parent perspective, how do you think about those types of issues, or kids getting pulled away by those types of things? And then where is your role as a parent in that? I don't want to say to keep them from doing it, but to not let them get too far off into the land of the extras.
Yeah, it's hard, man. I can't say that my example has worked pretty good so far, but that's I've seen other people who's for me, be honest with you, my first two kids, zero tolerance on anything, zero, and one of them was fine, and he knew he was smart enough how to sneak out and do his thing, and never gave us a problem, and another was like, it was a nightmare every goddamn day. Because so you had two kids, two different results. You had one that was like, oh yeah, that's cool, and knew how to speak to mom and get through things and do his thing and come back the next day and like, yeah, I did it, or bullshit, and you couldn't really give him shit about it because it was like whatever. And then the other was it was a problem every time. It was like
it was the nightmare. Same parenting style,
same. So one just refused to know and. She knew exactly why, and then thankful today. And then we have my youngest one that I've learned from both of them, but the circumstances are so different as well. So here's an example, okay? I know I'm going to sound one way or another, someone's going to say this is bad or you're a wiener. But for me, I don't want my kids drinking until they're of legal age. That's crazy, but that's actually what I want. Don't bug me with it. Don't drink around me. Don't do any of that stuff around me. I don't want it. But then as my youngest is coming through and he's a hockey player and all this stuff, it's like, he sees me. You stop at my house. What do we do? What's the first thing we do?
Crack a beer.
You having a beer? Yeah. He, like anybody on the outside, if you're looking at your dad who you actually thinks pretty cool and I like want to be like my dad and his cool friends, Everything we do is usually around a couple beers, and he's going to move away with the same friends that I have, and I'm going to sit there and say, don't ever have a beer. I don't want you to, and it might ruin your next day or whatever, but whatever. So the next problem I had was, and I was joking with him and Seabass one day, and I was explaining to them how what I thought. So it's always about conversation, right? So I was telling them, we were in the car one day, and I said, you know, guys, like, it's who you do these stupid things with. Because if you go to a party somewhere and you're the outsider, or you're the cool guy, or people want to get you, or whatever, it doesn't matter. You don't know who's got your back and who doesn't. Whereas if I came back, and this is what the conversation was, and if I was out of town and you guys were in the backyard on June 27th, and I came back and there was 18 beer bottles or 12 beer bottles on the in the backyard, I wouldn't be thrilled, but I'd say, well, you did it together and you got each other's back, no harm done. So they're both sitting in the back seat. Well, Seabass goes, June 27th?
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyways, I really thought about it. I was looking at my kid. I said, you know what? we're going to have a couple beers today. And he was like, and it was a couple. And there was two reasons I did it. One was to sit there and say, you and I can have a beer together. It's not going to kill either of us. It's actually going to make it kind of okay. It's not going to be a shit show. We're going to have a couple beers. The other thing was to just see if he could tolerate it and where he goes when he has them. You know what? I was pleasantly surprised. I had a great time. So I don't make it a habit, but we every now and then go have a couple beers together. Yeah. And it's like, it's kind of like cool because I know he's going to do it anyways. But it was a good relationship because it helped our relationship because, like I said, he's looking at, like, he knows, I know his culture and he knows that I know the culture. He knows who I am. He knows who I am. He asked me in the dressing room, he's explained some guys, which one are you, Dad? I go, oh, is that one of that one? And he just laughs. He goes, yeah, I know, I can tell. So for me to sit there and don't ever do that doesn't make any sense. So it's about teaching the process. Now, I got away from that a little bit, but it's like we've been talking about stuff since I can remember. We would talk about coffee. We talked about chew. We talked about reading people. We talked about just everything, booze and what it can do for you. So it was like it was a pretty healthy relationship going in anyways. Talked about girls. You know, he said, well, did you have a girlfriend in junior? I said, yeah, I did. I said, and actually for me, it was probably good because you know me, Charlie. I said, I can have a lot of fun. Like I like being with the guys and stuff like that. So having a girlfriend kind of kept me a little bit away from the guys all the time. So there was a good side of it. And there was many good sides to it. And then there was other times where it was like, hey, listen, you're a pain in the ass. I went with the boys. You know what I mean? But it was good for me. So like, it's understanding like there's, you don't want to be, yeah, you gotta be able to say no once in a while and teaching the kids that the fear of missing out. So it's like those little nuggets of always asking them what they want. And this is like part of the communication thing. It's not always telling them, it's asking questions. If you ask enough questions, they're going to come up with their own solutions. And then you can actually turn the tables on them if you want and say, well, you were saying this, son. Right.
Yeah. And I remember for me, like I said, my parents were more strict and my dad never did what you did. Like my dad still, like they're not drinkers. They're not into any of that stuff. And I never was either just because those were my parents. So that makes sense. But when it came to the hockey culture now I'm going into this world that I don't know and I don't have the resource or the guidance from an older brother or my dad or someone that's close to me to see. And I remember though, my parents did a pretty good job of not making me personally feel like I needed to hide things. And I think there was to a degree with them because they were on the more strict side, maybe I didn't fully tell them exactly what was going on, but they knew like 90% of where I was going to be, what was going on, who was there, those kinds of things. They made me feel comfortable enough to share that with them without getting in shit. So I remember my first rookie party when it would have been the same. I would have been 16 or whatever. And it was like, Ma, I don't have a choice. Yeah. Like, yeah. I have to go to this party. Yeah. I'm going to be drinking. Yeah. It is what it is. Arm. And it was, yeah. And it was nice because I actually didn't have a choice. It almost gave me no choice but to tell her. And like, cause my dad didn't care as much, but my mom cared more. She was the one, cause she's the one that worries about it. And it made me feel comfortable enough it kind of forced my hand where I had to tell her. And now I'm 16. We've already talked about this. And now for the rest of my junior career, I'm not shying away from talking to you guys about the reality of what is happening, more or less, you know, like I don't have to get into the graphic detail of what's happening where maybe somebody like you would understand. And they would be like, what are you talking about? You know, but for the most part, they made me feel that. And I think it's important for parents to have some of that where you're not so strict that kids feel like they have to hide. And I even have that with the guys that are in here because I have them all on really strict workout programs, meal plans and all that. And I was talking to two of the boys last week and I was telling them like the most important thing to make the relationship work is that you're honest, because if I don't know what you're doing, then I can't adjust my program to fit your needs. So I try to give them the feeling like they can talk to me about they went out with the boys and had some beers, or they stayed out way too late, or whatever they did.
They eat Doritos every night.
Yeah, eat Doritos or whatever. whatever they did that they weren't supposed, whatever that means, they weren't supposed to do based on the plan that they have for themselves. And so I think parents are, for the most part, I'm sure they tend to the side of the strict, like, we're not doing that. And that, but having said that, I've also seen parents that are complete opposite end where it's like anything goes, it's no problem.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's a good thing either.
Well,
right?
The thing with it is like, you don't know what the outcome is going to be.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like you really don't. So like, I think I think the best thing is you just have a good relationship with your kid. The better relationship that is, I think the more that you can have, like your parents can trust you, you can trust your parents. I think that's really, really important. So like, because I've seen very recent and very close hands, I've seen a kid give up hockey because of his girl. Done. Like, what? I look at my kid and he goes, what? Like, why would you ever do that for a girl? You know where that's going to end up? Nowhere. I've seen several of my friends drink themselves out of the game. Several. And other things, right? Or not give a shit. Like something went sideways. That those parents could have been one, yeah, let's have a beer together, or the other, you're never having a beer around me, and don't ever do it. And you might get one that turns out exactly the way you want, and it might one might go the opposite way. So there's no right recipe. I think the real key to it is you have a really good relationship with your kid. And for me, it was always, we talk about everything all the time. And so just like with the drinking or even with the girlfriends, like I would say to them, like I know maybe a lot of people might even think they're inappropriate conversations to have with your kid, but I would, when he was young, I'd say, what'd you think of that guy? And he'd judge them. And I liked it because he learned how to read people. He would notice early in his life that someone was just so in love, and he would go like, Dad, I go, Charlie, it could happen. But then we have that conversation. Yeah, it could happen. Like, you don't know. Like, why would that happen, Dad? Like, you're a little kid, right? Well, because, like, you know, give him reasons and stuff. But he could play hockey, or like, that's all he does is spend time with his girlfriend. Well, yeah, fun, eh? It could be, you know, seeing someone that's just, because you've seen some of my friends, just buckled and they're the funniest guy, loudest people in the place, and they're just hilarious. And Charlie's seen that firsthand from a young age to another age, and he goes, man, this guy, it was so funny, right? And I go, yeah, but let's put this in perspective. Do you want to be that guy, right? And then, like, he was able to see a little bit. So then the next piece of it was for him and I, and I don't know how many people can do this, but for me, it was, he loved hockey, like, from a young age. So from a young age, I think you can do this. It's like, how much do you love it? So what you try to do, as we said several times, is you build the why up as big as you possibly can. You're so that everything you want to do is so that you can be a hockey player. And that's not a bad thing, right? Because if you want to be a great hockey player, like for kids, it's like, in order to be a good hockey player, you have to do well in school and these other things to fall in line so you can have your dream. So you build that dream as big as you can. And that's the thing you could always parent against or with, right? So like, when it comes down to, I need to go to this party, the guys are doing this. It's like, okay, that's cool. Like, what about this? And then if that's big enough, then the other things don't matter quite as much.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I got three things just from backtracking a little bit. One of the things you said, before was, it's kind of about who you do the stupid things with. Because all kids are going to do something stupid at some point. And if they're with a good group of people that do a stupid thing together, then it's probably going to be significantly less damaging than if they do it in the wrong environment. And that's why we always stress that environment piece so much. And when you have a team of good kids or something to center them, it's like when they decide to do something stupid together because they're going to, at least they're with kids that have their best interest or... yeah, have their backs. They're not going to get booted in the face because they're at some party with a bunch of randoms that they don't know or kids that don't care about anything and they're just willing to get in shit all the time. So I think that's an important thing. And then the other part that you were talking about from the parenting perspective is it's not one thing is that it's not about being a perfect parent, of course. Can't be. And it's not all on you either. that's another thing to remember. And hopefully, because we're talking about a lot of different things and there's never a right answer, so it can still be kind of confusing to know, like, hey, should I talk to them about this or should I not? How much should I say? How much should I not say? How much detail should they get at this age versus this age? And there's all those questions, and there isn't really a right answer because it kind of depends on the kid. So it's what you said is really, I think, is important so that you don't drive yourself nuts as a parent, is that there's a certain amount of it that you just don't have control over as a parent. Because at the end of the day, they're going to be at school for 6 hours a day when you're not there. They're going to be on at their hockey tournament or with their buddies 3 hours a day at hockey or however long they're there, where you have no say in what goes on there. And those things are going to influence them just like you influence them when they're with you. So I think that if that can give you, as a parent, a little bit of breathing room where you don't feel like it's every single thing you do is 100% going to make you responsible for how your kid turns out. You're not that responsible for it. There is a portion of it and a significant portion of it that you won't have control over just because there's so much time that they're going to spend away from you being influenced by other things. And that's okay. You know, it's okay that that happens, but you just want to try to do the best that you can. And that's what it's all about. It's just, you're doing the best that you can do with the information. It's not that there's a right answer or a wrong answer or whatever. Just take these principles that we talk about and hopefully you can pull out what makes sense for your situation and use it. It's not that, you know, we're saying you need to be a perfect parent or you can't make a mistake or what you do will be the determining factor of how your kid turns out. There's some parents I know that are amazing and their kids are assholes.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. Like, I can't explain
that. Some idiots
that
have incredible kids.
Yeah, right?
I know.
So it's like, you just can't explain some of that stuff. So don't get too hung up on every single little thing, we're talking about every single little thing, you know?
And one of the things is a phone too, right? That's a huge distraction. It's, you know, it's hard. Like, and the other thing is like being relatable, right? Because, everyone says, well, we didn't have that when we were kids. And we didn't. But I don't know. We do now. So if you're gonna give a kid shit for playing NHL or something like that, it's like, it's TV. It's kinda. Maybe it's better. I don't know. I think if you do that all day, every day, that's a bad thing. But I think if you do it once in a while, I think it could be healthy. I don't know. Being on the phone all the time, like I show me an adult that's not on their phone all the time now. Can't really give your kids shit.
I know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And the other part too, just from my side, because I've been talking a lot about parenting things, and we mentioned this before, I'm not a parent, I don't have kids. So I'm trying to bring from the perspective of what I hear kids talk about and how I see them behave, because I'm the person that's with them when you're not with them. So I'm giving you what I hear and what they say and what they're focusing on from that side of it. So just keep that in mind too. I'm not coming from the perspective of this is what I do with my kid. It's like, this is what I do with your kids when you're not here.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
100%.
Maybe moving on to like some of the communication thing. One of the things you're big on is you always talk about asking questions, and that's something that I've definitely adopted into my own teaching style, because I don't think there's anything more effective for relationship building, not just with kids, just with anyone, than asking questions. And I say this even with my Christine, when we're talking, it's just like, people are so interesting, man. Like, you ask them two questions, ask them one, and they just go on a tear and they'll just tell you everything, because it's like, no one has ever asked them a question before. And it's just, it's really interesting how easy it is to make people open up by asking a couple questions. And then now they feel like they're connected with you. And I think that's a really good thing to do, as, especially as a parent with your kid, to make them want to have that relationship. So maybe you could talk about the asking questions thing a little bit, and then how you use that.
Yeah, well, I'd rather, it's not a tactic at all, but I guess I'm a good question answer or asker, but it gets people to talk, right? I'm actually not a big fan of doing all the talking myself. Like, if outside of this and a few other places, I don't do a lot of, I don't talk a lot. I like to keep things to myself, and I'm, for the most part, I joke around a little bit, and then if I talk, it's usually pretty deep shit. But it is, right? It is. Like, sometimes, a lot of times I like to learn.
Yeah.
So I think that's where my questions come from. But if you just look at someone, and if you're doing all the talking, just look at their face. And tell me when you lost them, because it's probably soon. Unless you're like, you know, Les Brown, the motivational speaker. then they're going to sit there like captivated. But most of the time, you're a pretty boring person. So what I'll do is I'll tell a story to my kid. They're like an old story and laugh and then ask him questions. And then he goes and does it. But anyways, if you ask questions, you get answers. Questions create conversations. And it's kind of like how you ask them, when you ask them and stuff like that. So I think the best way is, again, it goes back to, if you can disarm them a little bit, not do it at the kitchen table when you got pork chops, mashed potatoes, and peas, and you're saying, okay, son, so how's school? It's like, it's good, Dad. Yeah. Right? How's the coach? Yeah, it's fine. Right? But if you can ask questions like, what's the coach like? Like, does he speak to the kids a lot? How does he treat other people? Just different things to get them speaking, and then you're going to find out a lot. The great thing that I like about this, like, I don't know if people think about this much, is like, I learn a ton from my kid. So here's the funny thing, right? I've got bookshelves at home, all these books I've read. And I always go, hey, Charlie, here's a good book for you, man. This one's about this, this, and this. This one's about this, this, this. And most of them, he goes, oh, yeah. And then there was the George St. Pierre one that he read. And he goes, oh, that's good. And then, but he didn't want to tell Dad that, like, that's not cool, right? This is because he was pretty young. And there was another one and another one. And it was funny because I was talking about sleep one day with him. We're in the car. And he goes, this is just a quick, when he got back this season. And he goes, yeah, Dad, no, I think it's this, this, and this. I said, what the hell happened to you? Where'd you learn this? He goes, oh, me and Cam actually read a little bit together. I'm like, yeah. No, but actually, so him and Cam from his team, Cam is a dialed in guy, right? And he wants to get better and better and better. So they you know, he goes, I didn't read the whole book, Dad. But he goes, what he read was, it was like Why We Sleep and shit. He was dialed in, like he knew what he knew. And so he acted upon that. So like, it was like, cool. I'd ask him questions about the book. So anyways, my point to that is asking them questions when they say something or questions about your interest in them, you disarm them. Number two, you learn from them. And when you ask questions, they feel like they're actually smart and important. You're basically saying, tell me how smart you are. You know what I mean? So what do you know about, what do you know about sleep? Well, I thought about this. You have a conversation and all of a sudden he feels like, or whoever you're talking to feels like they're a little bit interesting. And if you're interesting to someone, then you become a little bit more close, friendly, right? So I just think asking questions is the greatest thing instead of lecturing all the time. So it's like, how do you think I played, Dad? Well, good, dude. How do you think you played? What do you think you did well? Like, it's like they could talk about it. Don't tell them that, well, your forecheck sucked.
Yeah.
It's not, it doesn't work.
Yeah, I think the other part too is if you don't get a good answer, you probably didn't ask a good question. To your point, like at the table, how's the coach? It's like, that's not a question. You know, how's the coach? That's a one word answer. It's good. Like how you rephrased it, and you're still asking basically, how's the coach? But sometimes the kids don't know how to answer unless you give them a very specific question, right? So it's like, how does the coach talk to you guys? What are the kinds of things he says? Does he yell a lot? How does he talk? You know what I mean? How's his body language? Like now they can answer that question, because how's the coach is too general. And when kids don't have the skill of answering question developed, I see with our guys in here all the time, we'll ask them questions and they don't know how to answer a question, you know? So even when I ask them the specific question, sometimes they'll still be like one word, two word answer. And I'm like, no, give me something here, man. Like answer the question, like think about what I just asked you and try to answer it with like a couple sentences. You know, and then eventually they get the skill. So now I got a couple kids in here that they've been coming consistently and I've been yanking answers out of them for questions for the last year and a half. And now I noticed one of the kids, maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago, you asked him a question and he answered with like 2-3 sentences. And I was like, there you go. A year and a half ago, I would have asked you the same question and you would have been like, pretty good, which is not a real answer. You know, so that's two points on the same point there. Is if you don't ask a good question, you'll probably not get a good answer. And then on the flip side, sometimes kids don't know how to answer a question. So you kind of have to point them in the right direction by getting more and more specific. And sometimes you got to fight for it. But I feel like some parents might just say, well, I asked him how his day was and he just says good. And he doesn't want to talk about it. It's like, yeah, but you're not asking a really good question. You know, you're not, it doesn't seem like you care by that type of question, you know? So that was just one thing I want to point out.
If you want to get them to talk, you can even say, like, your gym teacher seems like a wiener. Yeah. They'll be like, yeah, how'd you know? Like, you know, yeah, they might still get the yeah, but you, if you change the tone of it, right? So like I've done that to with his coach. I go, like, your coaches seem like beauties, eh? He goes, oh, dad, they're the best. And he talks. Yeah. I didn't say, you know, instead of going the other side and saying, what's your coaches like? Like, who cares? It's not a conversation, because now you just sound like a super fan.
Yeah, for sure. I think the next one I want to talk about is you've mentioned this before, is showing vulnerability as the parent. So it doesn't have to be in a question form, but just when you're talking about, even let's use the distractions as an example, like being able to talk about mistakes that you've made or where you fell short or whatever fill in the blank thing. Talk about the role of that a little bit, because when you're kids, like, you kind of feel like your parents are superheroes and they have all the answers and know everything. And some parents act like they are too.
Yeah. Well, one of the things he sees me fail all the time. He sees me fail all the time. That's one thing I can honestly say. He's seen me at a young age have a business go like sideways a little bit and be frustrated. He's seen me fail. So that's a good thing. He sees me fail pretty much every day because he will watch me work out. I don't finish every rep. Sometimes I quit, being honest here. That's vulnerable. It's tough to do. He's seen me, like, the other day, the day before we walked into the house, and he said, yeah, I got to tighten up my my nutrition right now. And I said, oh, man, I've been telling you this for a month or maybe 6 months. So I have to tighten up, dude. I said, I am... And I told him, I said, there's like whatever little things, I don't know if it's my age, but I told him how I felt, right? Oh, dad, like, because I come across as a pretty confident dude. And a lot of people think I know what I'm talking about with a lot of things. So I got my shit together. So so when he sees that I have feeling like I have hard things to do too, it's like disarms him, right? I think it's really important to show you're vulnerable. It's not really important to sit there and tell them all the details of why you're
a victim.
Yeah, you're a victim. Yeah. That's not what you're doing. But right. I love when I'm able to be able to share with my son, like, yeah, dude, I struggle with this one big time, right? Like, one of the things was, I said, we were talking about drinking the other day, and I said, I don't like being drunk at all. I don't like the feeling of it. He goes, what are you talking about? He goes, but you always have a couple beers with the guys. I go, yeah, I have a couple beers. So, but I cannot stand having the point where I get a buzz. He goes, why? I go, I don't like it because I feel out of control. And I said, you know, I went down that hole a bit. I said, and the other thing is, like, I really do feel like I'm one of these guys that can get out of control real quick. I've always kept an eye on that, always. Because I know, like, the way I go through things, it's like I'm an all-in guy a lot of the times. And I said, honestly, Charlie, I don't know if I could ever have one beer. I've never done it. I'm not trying to be cool, man. I've never had one beer. I've said no a few times, but if I have one, I know I'm having, I'm not saying 5 or 10, but I know I'm not having one. I'm having 2 or 3 for sure. So I said, I think it's a problem. And I realized, and I told him times where I was like, I don't know, man. Can't just come home, open up the barbecue and crack a couple beers. It's not a good habit. But anyways, telling them the times when I played hockey where I was when I was scared. I was scared. And you tell me a kid that's not 16 years old that doesn't walk in that dressing room as a 16-year-old kid that isn't nervous and scared. You are. You're scared, man. And it's okay to know that that's a real feeling. And it's okay to know that you can get over it and how to navigate it. And so you could have a parent sitting here goes, yeah, but I don't know what that dressing room is like. It's like, okay, let's do it a different way. You went to university and maybe you moved away. Like, you were nervous. You might have been excited, but you were scared. You don't know what's happening. You don't know if you're going to pass. You don't know who your dorm room guy is or if you're going to have enough food. Like, you get scared of things. It's okay to tell your kids like that you've been through that. You're not, no one's Superman.
Yeah, and I think the honesty part is tied in with that really closely too, is being able to be honest about things with yourself, with them. That's like one of my golden rules of life, is just like the honesty thing. It's like even just lying about stupid stuff. I don't like it. Like, I just don't like, and you can lie by omission too. you know, by you can just not tell the full story of what happened. And that doesn't mean when it's not appropriate, you're always as honest as possible. But it's just, I just don't like the feeling of knowing that I lied about something, you know. And I think parents, you can get away with that with your kids. But I think if you can be as honest as is appropriate with your kids when they're at whatever age, I think that goes a long way with that relationship thing again, right? They take their guard down because, you know, they don't feel like they're being judged or they're always doing something wrong or whatever those feelings are that would come up. And then the other part that you kind of, I'm going to skip ahead, was, you know, using stories to teach and to inspire your kids. It doesn't have to be a hockey story. It doesn't have to be a sports story. It doesn't have to be anything. Like you just mentioned with the parents, like if you, to draw on your own experience, you're picking a something that happened in university or something that happened at work or something that your dad told you or whatever it is. It's like, it's a lot more interesting when people listen to a story. And you can see that in social media, man. Like you see videos that go viral. They always talk about like the hook that happens at the start of the video. And there's kind of two versions. One is like this secret or these tips or what, that's one way. And then the other way would be like, you know, I was talking to this guy I met on the street yesterday. And like, that is another way where it's like, now the kid is hooked to, or whoever is watching is hooked. And those are like basic social media strategies to make things go viral. And it's like, well, why does that make things go viral? There's a reason. And the reason is it's engaging, right? It makes kids, they're captivated. That's why people like watching movies. That's why people like reading books. It's like, there's something about story that just plays into our psyche as people. So if you can draw on your own experience and you're able to communicate that through whatever medium is close to you, I think that's a huge, my dad was good at that. My dad was a good storyteller. He always had like some example of something that happened to use instead of just saying the lesson, like just giving the punchline right away.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's nice to kind of mask it in a story a little bit. And I know you do that quite a bit too.
Always a story.
Yeah.
Always a story. Yeah. Storyteller to the bone.
Yeah,
but it's relatable, right?
Yeah, it makes it way more relatable.
Like, and it's even better when you can use someone else, right?
Well, that's another good point too, is like, don't talk about yourself all the time. Even as a parent, it's boring, like not boring, gets tiresome as the kid listening to dad talk about himself and that one time he played hockey. It's like, hey man, you know. So it's nice if you can use other people, other things, you know. We kind of touched on the, you know, being hard on kids versus being a dick, but then maybe positive reinforcement versus criticism. Do you ever think that there's a point where you should be criticizing the kid? How do you think
just,
about that?
Just my opinion.
Yeah.
Just my opinion. Dale Carnegie's book, How to Win Friends and Influence People, is the three C's. Don't criticize, condemn, or complain. Criticize is the first one. Criticizing doesn't really do a whole lot, right? It's easy to do. So easy to do. So, but the only thing that I would say about that is there's one thing that I think we should have an expectation for, and that's effort. Like, effort. If I can be very, and I think it's fair to say that if the effort's not there, you should be a little bit displeased, or it might be an issue. If it's there continuously, then you have an actual issue. But everyone can have a bad day, right? So the criticizing is not the right thing. I don't think that's a constructive thing to do at all. I think finding solutions, you know, recognizing when something needs to get fixed, but criticizing is not really a good thing. It's easy to criticize a hockey game. Like, people have no idea, especially the higher levels you go. But even not even the higher levels. You play a game of hockey and you're a 12-year-old house league hockey player against other 12-year-old hockey players. It's hard because you're still basically the same level. So the guys are still trying to do one thing, is put the puck in the other net and defend. So it's still hard. So to sit there and you should have done this or criticize someone's play, it's like, it's very, you know, unless you're doing it, you have no idea. And the higher it goes, the harder things are to accomplish. So, I mean, it's criticizing someone's game that's what scouts do, right? That's what their jobs are to do, because they're going to try to pick guys for, or picking a team. When you're picking a team, then you can be critical of someone's play. But to be critical at someone, it's like, I don't think it's very constructive. No, if a kid asks, or if your kids, if you learn how to have conversations with your kid, and you know, there goes the question again. Like, how do you feel you're playing these days? Not after the game, say, yeah, that one sucked, or that wasn't a very good game. But you know, it could be after the game, but give it a little bit of time and just say, so how do you feel you're playing? How's the effort? How's this? How's that? Now you can actually talk about something that maybe came up.
Yeah, I think if there's a critique that is appropriate, it's back to there's a way to deliver it, you know, without criticizing directly. I feel like that indirect application is kind of where that rolls in again. So maybe you have maybe the kid's effort sucked, maybe it did, you know.
Well, that's real.
But that's not going up to the kid and be like, your effort sucked today.
Yeah.
You know, I don't personally think that's a constructive way to communicate.
No, neither do I.
Right? Let them figure it out. Help them to figure that out, you know? And I think that's the distinction between you're not just giving them positive reinforcement all the time, but you're also not just being critical because you're pissed off that they had a bad game, right?
The other side to that too is like there's times with all our kids that where they actually thought they were giving it everything they had. They did.
Yep.
We were talking about it and I would be like, dude, there's way more. I know that. I know there's way more. He goes, oh, really? Because they thought they're kids, man.
Bro, that was me,
they
man.
Thought they were going hard.
What do you
mean, Dad?
Do you remember that example I gave you? The Steve Eisman video I saw? I remember I was 12 or 13, whatever. This is like YouTube, the original YouTube. I remember seeing a video of Steve Eisman and it was like he comes off after a shift. And I he looked like he was going to die. Like he actually looked like he was going to go into cardiac arrest. And I remember it hitting me. I had to be like 12, 13, maybe even 14. And I looked at it and I was like, I've never felt like that ever. That was when it hit me. So it's like all of those years of being told work hard, work hard. I didn't know what that meant, you know? And so I think it's a little bit, or can be a little bit of an unfair expectation if you're just drilling the hard work or beating the hard work drum all the time. Cause the kid might not know. They might think they're working hard.
They might think they're working hard, but this is where being somewhat of a coach, right? Like, and you could be a dumb dad and do this. Like if you're talking about it, like sincerely just having a conversation and the kid thinks I was working hard, it's like, okay, well, here's an example. Like just an example. Like you don't beat the shit out of him. You find a way to make it good, right? I think you have speed and strength, son. And I just find that you get maybe past a D and I feel like you don't drive the net. I said, like, why don't you just try like really driving to the net? Just try, get to the blue paint with the puck or after you make a pass, get to there. It's faster and harder than anyone. Like at least it's a tool to go. And then maybe he goes, oh, okay. Like, and he tries it and it works. And he goes, oh, well, that's just, you're working harder. You know what I mean? There's times where they think that they're doing everything they can.
Yeah. Well, that's the other part too, is the like non-specific advice. And that kind of goes back to what we talked about with parents, maybe not being 100% on what they know to say. Because if you just say work hard, like nobody knows what that means. It's non-specific, right? But if you give them you're stronger and faster, try to get to the blue paint. That's like an objective now. Like now that's a task that I can complete, you know? And maybe the first time the kid tries to burn the D's in the way the whole time. And he's like, oh, well, maybe I could go a little faster and see if I can get around him. Maybe I can go a little faster. Maybe I can lean on him a little and see if I can get around him. And now they're figuring out a little bit of more of what you meant by hard work or whatever, you know? So that's a good example. Last two here, just kind of wrapping up a little bit. We kind of, the more of a theme, I guess, is just kind of working through problems together. So a couple examples I wrote down about that is handling your coaches, dressing room situation, and then maybe even outside of hockey, things that happen at school or conflicts that come up. The idea of you're trying to help work through them together. You're not just going to solve their problem, if that makes sense.
Yeah, just get throw me a bone here.
So like if a kid's being a prick at school, for example, and right away, like you go into the school, guns blazing to talk to the principal or whatever, it's like, that should be a option for later if it's a issue that keeps persisting. But rather than jump right to, let's go to the school and yell, maybe it's like, okay, son, let's figure out how we can solve the problem that you're having. So instead of you solving their problem, you're helping them work through their problem. Does that kind of make sense? So maybe you can talk about a little bit about that, because I've seen that a lot with parents too, where it's like they try to solve the problem, like they try to come in and have the conversation right away, and like sometimes I'm like, how come your kid isn't talking to me, or how come the kid isn't trying to figure this out on their own a little bit or whatever. So they're kind of missing the lesson when you try to solve the problems all the time. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well, the problem is that it just keeps getting worse, right?
Yeah.
Because like, I guess I know exactly what you're saying. There's a million examples that you can use with this, but I mean, a coaching problem or something with the teachers, it's like, you got to be able to stand up for yourself and have a conversation, man, and talk to them. The problem with me is like, you just had one the other day. If you're 18 years old, I want to hear from your dad.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear from your dad.
Don't want to.
And that's what actually happens, right?
That is what happens.
Parents, so like, I would just take it from there, back it up to that. It's like, when you always, we can give a bunch of examples, it might get boring, might not, I don't know, but if you always solve your kids' problems, then what happens is when they become of age where they should be asking questions or making phone calls or doing somewhat adult things, if you call booking an appointment an adult thing, then you're going to do it for them the rest of their life. Not the rest of their life, but like, it's like, you don't let them grow up. So, you know, I had someone stop in here the other day, and the kid's 18 or no, actually 20, dude, 21. Trying to find out if I had ice. And I just looked at him like with the eyes of a chicken going, yeah, I might, I don't know. I don't want to talk to him.
I agree.
I don't want to talk to you. Your kid's 21 years old.
I just had that 2 weeks ago. Yeah. Same thing.
I won't talk to you about it.
Yeah.
18 until the kid calls me. Or stops in here himself. Like, you drove all the way, actually from kind of out of town, to stop in to ask me what ice and what he needs to work on and stuff. And I was just looking at him. I was ready to snap, but I didn't. Nice guy. No, really. Nice guy. I just let it go. But there's no way I'm texting you or calling you. Your son could call. He's 20, 21 years old.
Yep.
And this is what happens, right?
Yeah. Who wants it, right?
Well, the kid hasn't called me.
Yeah. I know.
I don't know if dad's waiting for Andy said he would text. Call if you want to do it. And that's what happens. So what happens is you make your kid weaker. If you always protect them and always solve all their problems, you make them weaker. And the funny thing was, the things that he said his kid needs to work on is the two things that is the best at for himself. It's not what he needs to work on. So it's like, it's unbelievable. So I would say that, you know, if you don't let them, hey, you know what? Here's the thing, right? My kid does all these different things. And if there's one thing that, like, there's a couple things he's got to make phone calls for and text and all that stuff, like he does it with you with nutrition. I'm not doing it. Like, I'm kind of here, but if he's not going to talk to you about the nutrition plan, like, I'm not going to get on him and say, like, you know, are you allowed to have that?
Nor am I.
Right, right.
He's got to get on it himself.
Do you want it,
man,
or not? Because there's nothing that annoys me as a coach more than when dad does it or the kids just will refuse to ask questions. So speaking of that, like, this is a really good, now we got on one, right? So you have your nutrition plan. Like, so here's the thing. You work with me. I see the amount of effort that goes in and the detail and the studying and the precision and the, everything that goes into the workouts to make it the best. And then the few phone calls that we make with some NHL guys, like strength coaches and stuff, just to make sure, do you get it? And they're like, yeah. Okay, so that's good. You just don't write a workout out, right? So some kids come in here and they look at the board and they're 20-year-old kids and they go, okay, yeah. And they take it for granted. And that's okay. That's fine. And then they don't have the decency to call to say, oh, I can't make it this week or tomorrow or whatever. Or they don't have they don't understand how busy this place can be. And it's like, the world isn't about you. But the one that gets me the most is that you're offering our certain clients for free a meal plan. And the meal plan is like to their body weight, to their goals, to a T, unbelievable. So these kids don't even have to think. And all I have to do is to take that sheet, bring it home, and like prepare a couple meals for free. So last year you said, here you go. You made it really good for them. And I know the hours that went into that. It was nonstop. And if someone could come in and say, yeah, I don't like this. Okay, well, we can do this. I know it. And then you told these guys once, if which you shouldn't have to, because it basically, it should be, Eric, should I follow the same goal as last year, or should I, you know, and then you could tweak it. But you were nice enough to say, guys, if you want your meal plans, let me know. And how many guys have actually asked you out of the all our group? And this is a very small percentage.
Yeah, out of like, out of 20, let's say 25 guys in that one particular group.
Yeah.
Like three.
Probably. There you go.
Free.
Free and excellent.
So it's like,
if that was online for $75 a month, it would be worth it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is the problem, is like, you know, as a coach, it's like in anything, if you're going to put you, Eric, put that time and energy and care and precision into something, and you have to beg people to have it, it's like, no thanks, man.
Yeah.
It's like, you either want this or you don't. Because if you want it, it's here. Now I really want to help you.
Mm-hmm.
Then I can stay on top. But then there's only so much coaching and begging you can do to have someone want their goals and dreams.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So own your life, man.
Mm-hmm.
Own your life.
Yeah. And it's the same on the workouts. It's like, you got the kid, you can tell the kid that doesn't give a rip. And it's like, I don't care to give you the individual attention then. Like, if you want to keep coming to work out, you can come work out. But it's like, I can only say it 37 times and then I'm not saying it anymore. Right. And now it's not, I'm not being a bad trainer. You're being a bad student, you know? So that's the thing. So you keep poking, but at the end of the day, if it's, you know, it has to come from mom and dad, or it has to, the kid is not showing that they care or whatever, or they're not willing to help themselves. And I think that's kind of the moral of the story from that part of it, is like teach your kids how to solve problems, like how to advocate for themselves, how to, you know, get things that they want and figure it out for themselves. And I think that's the key for that, is like, you're not, don't hijack their problem. Because if there's one dad ever or one mom that comes in and says, my kid needs a meal plan, my answer to them is going to be like, have them come talk to me. No matter what, that's what the answer is going to be. It's not going to be, oh yeah, but I'll pay you. I don't want your money. I don't want it. Because the amount of time it takes me to do that specific to their situation, if they don't care, it's like, it's not worth it.
It's an exercise, you know, in futility.
So you got to, that's one of the things you want to instill on the kids.
But by the way, it's very rewarding to watch your son or your daughter at the younger, the better, being able to make a phone call or go up to someone and say, hey, can I have a meeting or whatever, and talk to them as an adult. Very, very rewarding. Very nice to see. And I love it when a kid comes in here and ever asks, can I speak to you about whatever? It's like 100%. When a kid does it, it always.
Well, and from the coaching side too, it's extremely impressive. It's like, I've let people work out here just because they did that, where they wouldn't, I wouldn't. If their dad or their mom messaged me, I'd be like, full, sorry. But because they come in themselves and talk to me about it, it's like, I will make room. Like, I will make a spot where there isn't one so that you can come here if that's the kind of conversation I get. Last one, nonverbal communication.
Yeah, it's body language, man.
Thoughts about from the parent to the kid, the nonverbal.
Yeah, it's body language. You're really, it's no different than a player, right? Things don't go your way, or you don't get what you want, and you have a temper tantrum, or you slam your stick, or roll the shoulders back, roll the eyeballs back. You're saying exactly how you feel. So, your body language is huge. So I'm just thinking of examples, right? After a game, if you got the car ride, and you're quiet and you're tapping your fingers on the steering wheel, or, you know, you do the huffing and puffing and all that stuff, or you got your eyes are crossed and your nose is crossed and ears are crossed, it's like they know something's wrong. So even though you say everything's fine, your body language says differently. Pretty simple. Body language, just like a hockey player, says it all.
Cool. That's the end of the series. I think if I had a one line wrap up for all of it, it would be like, be the example you're trying to teach as the parent with all this stuff, the last six episodes that we've talked about. That will set you up for the most likely path of success as mom and dad, is what I would say. Do you have anything else you'd like to close on? Not just this episode, but series. Anything to say?
always keep in mind, like, you know, the youth hockey thing. We say this all the time, but it can get crazy. Parents can get out of joint, get their nose out of joint, and be comparing. And just always remember your kids, they're playing hockey. But keep it fun. Keep it enjoyable. It'll get serious enough if it does get serious enough, and then everything changes. That's it, man. As a parent, like, it's good.
Cool. So Q&A episode next week, for you guys that are members on the site. If you want to become a member, when you log in, there's a button on your login page that says submit question. You can click that, write us in. We'll try to wrap up on that next week, tighten up any other specific questions you guys have, and then we'll be on to the next thing. So we'll see you guys for that episode next week.